Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Welcome back to the IL Preps Podcast, coming in under the wire on a Friday afternoon. I am Terry Foy, joined once again by Ty Zanders. Ty, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
It's been a while since we've done this, but before we dive into the recruiting news, the biggest story in all of lacrosse this week has been Monday's announcement, the formal announcement of the Premier Lacrosse League. You, aside from a few tweets, haven't necessarily had the platform to share your thoughts on the PLL, so I want to provide that to you now. What do you think?
I mean, more than anything, it's just excitement. I mean, I think that anytime something new comes into the fray in lacrosse, I think there's just this huge ripple effect of excitement. I think everyone's really anticipating kind of what the PLL will be, and we learned so much more. I think the NBC deal, the player list, I mean, I think that's everyone's like biggest takeaway is just the level of talent. I mean, it's okay, who's kind of left in the MLL? You know, I mean, they have every major player almost. So I think, you know, from my perspective, you know, given how busy the summer is, I don't get to watch a ton of MLL. It's just, you know, I'm watching lacrosse 12 hours a day, and for the most part, don't want to come home and watch, you know, the MLL. So I think, like, with this product that's coming in and how loaded some of these teams will be, and the level of TV coverage, I know I'll be tuning in every week. I can't wait.
It's going to be interesting to see what type of youth or recruiting age strategy they adopt. Certainly, when you just look at the names of the, or the titles of some of the positions that are already in the league office, you can tell that there's going to be a component of that that's a part of their overall strategy, as it must be, and really must be for any professional league that wants to be successful. So certainly going to have an impact on the landscape that we talk about. But, you know, your point is well taken. The excitement is really, really, in and of itself, the excitement has had a ripple effect. So if you want to hear more about PLL, make sure to check out our podcast this week with Paul Rabel, and make sure to check back to the Inside Lacrosse iTunes feed, our podcast feed. We're going to be talking to Paul a couple more times as some of the big announcements unravel over the course of the next few months, particularly around which markets they are heading to in the summer of 2019 and as they build and compose their rosters and teams. But Ty, the week before that, the biggest story in lacrosse was Brennan O'Neill's commitment to Duke. He's the number one ranked player in the class of 2020. You and I have already spoken about it. He is, in my estimation, I think it's fair to say, top five most impactful recruits easily. I would probably argue that he is the most impactful recruit in the history of lacrosse recruiting, for all intents and purposes, but certainly indisputably in the top five. And after having committed to Penn State as an eighth grader 3 years ago, he is now going to become a Blue Devil. He pledged his commitment to Duke in October. What was your reaction to that news?
To me, it was something that I expected. It was like, given T91's connections to Duke and you know, Duke's stranglehold on Long Island talent over the years, I mean, given the whole staff is from the island, to me, it wasn't a matter of if. It was kind of like a matter of when he would commit to Duke. It just felt like a natural fit. And, I mean, I don't need to say that they were, you know, coveting him, because like everyone was. Everyone wanted him. But I just had a feeling this would happen. I knew Notre Dame would be a player. And they were. He made visits to Duke and UVA in the same weekend. He checked out Penn State for the way out game, and then of course, you know, was at Notre Dame.
Did he visit Maryland?
He was supposed to. I think that I want to say that was canceled in favor of going to Penn State. Committed to Duke, and I think that I talked about it extensively on LSN a few weeks ago. I think that with these 2 years of recruits that Duke will have in the 19 and 20 class, it's unlike anything I've seen. And I say this, you know, word for word, I compare it to 2007, 2008 UVA, when they got the Bratton twins, and they got Bray Malfris, Adam Gittleman, and the next year turn around and got Steele Stanwyck and Chris Bocklet and some talent, you know, around them. So I think there's more talent in these two classes between the 19s they have, you know, four or five excellent defensemen, some middies that I think will make an impact, and I'm loving these 2 years of recruits, and I can't wait to see O'Neal, you know, make plays these next, you know, 6+ years. I think we'll be covering him a lot. I'm sure we'll make a magazine cover or two or three or four. But I think one of the things I said about him is he is generational talent, and that's backed up by kind of what you're saying about him in terms of the impact that he can make. I got a little heat about this. I think that everyone has like different definitions of generational, but to me, I think it's someone that comes along once every 10, 15 years. Is that fair? I mean, I think it's pretty fair to call him generational.
For sure. I mean, I think the longest a generation could probably be defined as is like 20 years.
Yeah.
I think, you know, kind of narrowing the focus a little bit more when you talk about recruiting generations to a 10 or 15 year window, that seems logical to me.
I mean, Lyle Thompson was class of 2011, and I would imagine, I mean, we did have number one. I would imagine I would have felt a similar way about him if he played more in the recruiting circuit. I think he was very much someone that we talked about, you know, in tandem with Miles, who's a year older, up at Lafayette. I mean, they got a lot of talk, you know, when I think John Gurley was a senior in 2009, and they had a lot of talent on that team and made the state championship game in Class C. But O'Neal, I mean, he's the best I've seen. He's the best I've evaluated. And, I mean, a lot of memories stick out about Brennan. I think that I look back a couple of years. I think it was 2016, I want to say. And we're at Big Four Champions League. And, you know, and the old recruiting rules, if you want to call it that, you know, were in effect. And there were schools that were, you know, the bottom half of D1 or out to the top 20 that they would put their binder away. They would grab, like, an ice cream cone. And they would go and watch this kid. And, like, I think that's kind of, I wouldn't say sums up his game, but you watch him and you never know what you're going to get. I mean, the creativity that comes from his game, you know, and you get comparison to Mark Matthews and John Grant Jr. and Pat Spencer, I think is maybe the most logical American comparison, in my opinion, in terms of the size and creativity. He's so creative, and he's talked about that. He talked about it with you in Minute Mania, and just the array of goals that he can score, and just the overall like fearlessness that he has as a Dodger, you know, coming across the top. It's special, and every opportunity I get to watch him, you know, is enjoyable in the sense that, I mean, he's just, you never know what you're going to get, and again, I can't wait to see him on TV.
And so, in talking about why he chose Duke, not only did Brennan mention some of the obvious factors such as, you know, the competitive level of the program and the quality of the education, the degree that you leave with and the network that you join when you do graduate, but on top of that, one of the things that I found notable was he cited how successful Duke's been in developing attackmen, and specifically the fact that he will be coached by certainly Matt Donosky and presumably Ned Crotty, who had been a volunteer with the team in 2018. I found that really interesting because one of the things that lacrosse fans were cheering for was that he was going to end up in a program where, you know, his full skill set was going to be able to flourish, as opposed to ending up at a place where it felt like he was going to be handcuffed a little bit. And I certainly think that there's aspects of that at Duke, but I also think that, you know, there was a component of me where I'm like, I want him to go to a team where he is so much better than his teammates offensively that he really is kind of the focal point. The difference being at Duke, his teammates are going to be so good. You just outlined the recruiting classes that are surrounding him. It's going to be really difficult for defenses to hone in on him solely, and as
you
a result,
can't.
He's going to get a lot of room to operate. What do you kind of envision him looking like in a blue and white uniform?
Yeah, I mean, he'll definitely fill it out by then. You know, I think that 6'2", 235, you know, pound frame as a junior. You know, what will that be like? You know, when he's in a college, you know, strength and conditioning, you know, environment. I think that, you know, right now, you know, he's filled out pretty solid, but, you know, in college, that's a scary thing. Like, where will his game be 2 years from now, you know, given his development in the last couple? I don't think that he will maybe be as, like, ball dominant as, like, as normal Duke attackman, like Gutterding. But I think that it'll just be, like, it'll be a really, really impressive top six offensively around him. And like you mentioned, I think that this will open up opportunities for a lot of talent, you know, around him. He has his teammate Aiden Denenta come in with him. As far as I know, this is like the first St. Anthony's recruits to go to Duke in a long, long time. I mean, at least 15 years, 20 years. It's long been kind of a Chaminade factory of sorts. You know, but I think, like, I look at the 19 class, and to me, a kid like Dyson Williams, who's a lefty from Hill, I think will probably move up to the midfield. I think that it'll be a really solid midfield for Duke. I'm trying to, you know, think ahead who else will be on that attack line in 2021. You know, but it'll be fun to watch.
In the group ahead of him are Jake Caputo and Christian Mulet.
Yeah.
You know, Caputo will probably play midfield as well. Mulet, you know, probably can swing between the two. And then there's more spots available in this 20 class as well. So, you know, thinking about attackmen from the classes of 2018 and 2017, it'll be interesting to see how they forecast. I mean, certainly heading into, you know, next spring, you mentioned Justin Gutterding's departure. It's going to be the most important question that the Blue Devils are going to answer. I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about what O'Neill's transition, switched commitment from Penn State to Duke, means for the sport in conjunction with Brennan Grimes' switched commitment from Ohio State to Johns Hopkins. Because what was interesting about those two guys being ranked number one and two is the fact that they were going to these Big Ten schools that hadn't won national championships and had great coaching staffs, great success. It really felt like their commitments, you know, had they ended up matriculating to those two places, had the capacity to change the face of college lacrosse. And now by choosing Johns Hopkins, one of the most traditional powers in the sport, and Duke, one of the most recent traditional powers in the sport, it doesn't feel that way. It doesn't feel like this recruiting group is going to directly be the change in kind of the face of college lacrosse. I guess I don't necessarily know how to ask it. Is there hope for folks who want to see disruption in the status quo? Or do you think these two are so talented that we can expect Duke and Johns Hopkins to, you know, continue to be perennial Final Four contenders through at least the, you know, spring of 24?
Well, I will say Duke better be, you know, because I did make a bet that, you know, if Duke doesn't make three Final Fours or win a championship, that I will jump in the Inner Harbor, which, if you know, Baltimore is not pleasant. But no, I mean, I do expect Duke to be there for even longer. I mean, we've seen this model of consistency they've had these last few years, you know, making it to the Final Four. And I do expect that. And I think with Hopkins, I think that they're taking bigger classes as opposed to Duke when, you know, taking kids of about 8 or 9 kids per year. Hopkins more so 14, 15, 16 range. I like what Hopkins is doing, but I mean, I look at Grimes, and that's a kid that will come in and, you know, kind of fill that role of you know, that Cole Williams wing dodger, wing shooter. And I think, you know, beyond that, I think about these three top 10 players. I think Jack Schercher is someone we can kind of throw into that mix in the sense that, you know, he's the number two defenseman, number 10 overall, going to Maryland, and Maryland's putting together a pretty darn good class that, I mean, like Duke, they're very, very consistent. I mean, how many straight Final Fours was that, you know, for them? So, you know, it's interesting. I think that a lot of people are very quick to talk about the downfall of early recruiting, and now it's pretty much over with these 20s and about 5 or 6 21s. But, I mean, think about it. These kids made decisions as 14 and 15-year-olds. And when they switch, a lot of people just kind of have that same shared sentiment of, well, no duh, they're changing because they committed as 14, 15-year-olds, and oftentimes things change. But, I mean, a flip to me is a kid, much to the dismay of these former schools, they're making an upgrade academically and or lacrosse-wise, and I think it's very interesting just to see what the landscape has become. There's been 10 flips since the first. There have been 25 kids. I mean, yeah, 10 flips. 10 ranked flips, and then 25 players have committed since the first from that top 100. So things are happening. A lot of things are happening, and commitments have been occurring in bunches, and we'll get into those as we go forward.
I want to shift the focus to Charlottesville, where the University of Virginia on September 1st did not have a commitment in the class of 2020.
It's new for them, yeah.
And that has since changed. They've picked up 4 players since October 1st. So it's not even to say that September was super active relative to some other programs.
Their fans are panicking.
Exactly. So probably the most high-profile player that has made his commitment to the Cavaliers is five-star attackman Russell Mair. But he is flanked by, really, they're kind of building a spine from front to back, so to speak. Midfielder Jack Walsh was a recent commitment picked up this week. Jake Naso is a face-off specialist. I think he was actually the first guy in the class to make his choice known. And then Michael Prestipino, a defenseman from Conestoga High School in PA, originally committed to Penn State, now going to be a Cavalier as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have a lot of thoughts about this class. It is a group that, if you look at Virginia's history, they're not as much. They're not known for dominating Long Island, and you know, with three of their four recruits right now being from the island. I mean, in comparison, they have four on the roster right now. That's it. So you know, to kind of have a you know, kind of establish a you know, a strong hold on Long Island and at St. Anthony's in particular, I think it is huge for them. I'm very impressed with this class. I mean, Russell Mair is someone we've both watched you know, extensively. He's electric. He makes things happen. He can play attack. He can play midi. He dodges, you know, with a ton of confidence and assertiveness. And just someone who, I mean, like most of my five stars, I feel very good about him panning out. Wherever that is. And I think beyond this, you know, I fully expect Virginia to have at least one or two top 100 players on board offensively in the next week. They are in the mix for number 8 junior Patrick McIntosh, who was a final two of Georgetown and UVA. So, I mean, I would not be shocked for the Wahoos to get him. He's another lefty, and he's from Salisbury in Connecticut and plays for Sweet Lakes. So, very impressed with this UVA group. I mean, like I said, I think their fans, very loyal fans, were panicking, I'm sure, in September when they got into October 1st and got their first commitment finally. And now, I mean, it's looking like a group that could rival Duke, Maryland, Yale, you know, some of the best classes right now in the country.
A program that was in a similar boat in the sense that they didn't have a commitment as of mid-October in the class of 2020, but traditionally, that hasn't been a big deal because they're pretty good at picking up guys as late as signing week. Notre Dame picked up its first two commitments over the course of the last 10 days since the last time we recorded. Midfielder Carter Parlett, a five-star player out of Ponte Vedra High School, Sweet Lakes, Florida. He is a midfielder. And Eric Dobson, another Sweet Lakes, Florida midi. He's out of Fleming Island. Kind of helped set the foundation for the Fighting Irish's 2020 class. What was your reaction to those two pickups?
Jacksonville. I mean, that's, like I said on Twitter, I mean, the three Notre Dame recruits these next 2 years coming from the Jacksonville area. You know, with Parlett, I mean, he opened up his process about 2 or 3 weeks ago, decommitting from Syracuse. That had been rumored for a while. And, you know, made visits, I think, to Duke and Notre Dame, I want to say, and maybe one more. I think had Michigan and UVA in the mix as well. I'm not sure if he made visits there, but Parlett's, you know, a great player. I mean, he's so two-handed that I screwed up his dominant hand calling him a lefty because I think so many teams have forced him to go left with his offhand that he's made plays with that that left hand. So I'm a huge fan of his and with his good friend Eric Dobson, who is someone who's 6'3", 6'4", looks like he's 6'6", to be honest, and he's someone who you know, as a threat, as a step-down shooter with Parlett, I think he's a very creative, crafty dodger who can make plays a number of ways, and both have been outstanding for Sweet Lakes Florida the last couple of years.
You mentioned that Notre Dame was in play for O'Neal, and then also Ryan McKenzie, a midfielder who from CBA Syracuse, who committed to Duke in late September. So for the Fighting Irish to pick up these two, you know, talented midfielders from similar backgrounds was certainly meaningful. And it'll be interesting to watch how their class continues to develop. You mentioned McIntosh. He is our highest ranked he is our highest ranked uncommitted player at this point.
Only 5-star left.
Yeah.
Yep.
And there are only, you know, the numbers of top 100 players that are uncommitted are dwindling as well. So for the top programs, it's certainly, you know, kind of rubber meets the road time. But that's essentially the question that I was going to ask. How, and this is number one, different for every player, and number two, really impossible for you to speculate about, But at the same time, I'm going to ask the question, how much flipping do you expect from here on out for guys who made it, who have made a decision since September 1st? Relative to, say, the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is probably, it seems very fitting that you segue that from Notre Dame, you know, a group that, a staff that has kind of made a living, you know, poaching. And as you said earlier in the podcast, I mean, getting recruits up until signing week. So I expect them to do that. And, you know, it's funny with Notre Dame just having two kids, you know, right now in the fray. I'm like, who's left? Like, who's out there? There are 15 or so players that are uncommitted. You know, how many will they get from that group? How many will they poach from other schools? I would not be shocked to see them have a five-star these next, you know, this next year or so that is committed elsewhere right now. So, I mean, overall, it's tough. I mean, because if you look at the schools that these kids are committed to, very rarely do players commit to Duke, Virginia, Yale, Carolina. I mean, those are the schools right now that dominate, you know, that top 25, top 50. Very rarely do those schools get poached. So, like, I do expect a decent amount to happen. I'm very curious just in particular how much movement happens over the summer, given that not a whole lot happened in the 19s. I'm not expecting a lot because a lot has happened these last, just last, like, month or so. So, I'm not expecting as much to go down, but it will. I just don't think that the number of flips, I think the number of flips will probably rival what it's been the last couple of years. But so much has been front-loaded to me.
A couple other guys whose commitment we want to talk about. Number 27, TJ Haley, making his commitment to Georgetown.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, that's a commit that I think has to make that staff very happy. I mean, I heard from a source that they actually were on their home visit with Haley. You know, locally, he's a St. John's product, and he committed on the visit. So that's pretty cool. I think has to make them feel very good. You know, I watched Haley a ton this summer, and I feel like, you know, more often than not, I was sitting close to, if not next to, one of the members of the Georgetown staff. So that was a kid they coveted. I called him the smartest player in the class, maybe. I do feel that way. He's just, he doesn't mess up. He doesn't make mistakes, which is rare for you know, a kid that age. He's very impressive from a athletic, you know, a lacrosse IQ standpoint. And you know, I love watching him play. I mean, he's racked up assists the last couple of years and has led the cadets in points, if I'm not mistaken. But you know, someone who I think they can really build around, and to me, probably the biggest recruit they've gotten offensively and defensively since Dan Beccaro a couple of years ago. So I'm a huge fan of Haley. He's making his way over to next level alongside two other ranked attackmen in Joey Graham and Isaac Aronson. He was previously with Madlax, but Haley's a stud. I think that's huge for the Hoyas.
And you mentioned Aronson. He is an attackman from Bullis. He made his commitment to Michigan on October 23rd, one of a pair of top 100s who made their commitment to Michigan in recent days. Brendan McCabe, a defenseman, among the other one to pledge to Coach Kevin Connery.
Yeah, I love them both. I mean, with McCabe, I heard a great quote from a coach you know, recently. I think it was this morning, actually, who said he could either be a first-team All-American or a team All-American or lead the league in penalty minutes because he's so mean. And, I mean, I have to watch the film again, but I do remember McCabe playing Brendan O'Neill better than most people do. You know, played him very tough and matched up with him well size-wise. So that's what McCabe can give you. He's very physical, you know, big, mean, just nasty, has a mean streak. So I think between McCabe and Aronson, who was a big, tough clutch. I mean, I remember him getting the assist from Robert Shane in the final seconds in the ISU championship game that I attended with Dan Ayburn, just buried it, you know, sitting on the doorstep to beat Landon and give him the ring. So, yeah, I think that's a nice little pairing there. I do feel pretty good about the Michigan class. It's a lot of holdovers from a group that John Paul recruited. And, you know, right now I think Kevin Connery has to feel pretty good about his class he's putting together right now.
A few others that we want to touch on, top 100 commitments. Number 93, Henry Bonney, an attackman from Deerfield, committed to Dartmouth. This one caught my attention. I was interested in this. What do you make of the Big Green picking up Bonney?
It's huge for them, and we have to kind of give a shout-out to Dartmouth. They've done a really good job with this 20 class. I think Mikey Mauricio is excellent. Logan Tucker is a very strong faceoff guy, in my opinion. And Bonney is, again, I mean, when it's a school like Dartmouth, who hasn't had a ton of success lately, gets a top 100 talent, it's pretty big. And Bonney is someone who has had a really strong beginning to his career at Deerfield. Plays a pretty strong role for them. And I'm impressed. I mean, I'm not sure the level of interest from the Ivies that he got, but I know he had some other Ivies in Georgetown with his brothers on board, interested.
And then staying in the Ivy League, on Wednesday, goalie Connor Terrio committed to Brown. Certainly Brown has a legacy of top-notch goaltenders. What do you think of that?
Yeah, he's next in line. I mean, I see him being a multi-year starter for the Bears. I love the kid. I haven't watched him a ton, but definitely sticks out in my memory from Maverick Showtime. He had a huge second half, I think it was, of the Showtime All-Star game. Coach's son, I think his dad is the head coach at Keene State. So he has a pretty strong lineage and understanding of lacrosse. So I think that's a very typical get for Brown. You know, that kind of dominates the New England prep school scene, but big for them.
The 20th goalie to commit in this class of 2020 to a Division I program. Well, Ty, that'll do it for the recruiting news portion of this podcast. But you were down last weekend in Atlanta at the IL Southeast Prospect Day. Got an opportunity to take in some of the local talent. Gerard Kane, a lefty attackman, committed to Ohio State, was certainly one of the most notable performances. What was your overall reaction to kind of the visit to Atlanta?
It was great. I mean, it's an area that I've touted before is kind of an emerging hotbed in a sense, you know, and that may sound extreme, but if you look at the volume of talent that has come out of Atlanta recruiting wise, you know, and there hasn't had a huge impact in Division I yet, but I think with the coming together of LB3 and Thunder has been huge. I mean, we saw their headquarters on Friday night, spent some time there, interviewed some people. Got to get over the coaches. Actually, Greg Granlund was down there for Faceoff Academy. A really impressive warehouse. I mean, a big pot of turf. They're building a mini weight room and film area. But I've just been very impressed with the commitment that the state of Georgia's had towards lacrosse and the hunger that everyone has for the sport down there. So my visit down there was great. I think that it was cool for me to see more of Kane, but also kind of the next in line. I think that the 2021 class and 22s even we've heard about, I think will be very impactful down there, especially at attack with guys like Andrew Atchison and Braden Irksa, who I think are teammates for Lassiter. So it was great. I mean, it's cool to have an event like that that kind of combines the instructional aspect with games, and looking forward to being back out there this weekend for the Mid-Atlantic Prospect Day right around here in Baltimore.
Yeah, you mentioned, obviously, if you're interested in learning more about the IL Southeast Prospect Day, make sure to visit InsideLacrosse.com. There's a full write-up of evaluations from that event, as well as photos, and there will be more video content coming as well. And make sure to follow Inside Lacrosse on Twitter and Instagram, IL Invitational, IL Preps, for more coverage this weekend from the IL Mid-Atlantic Prospect Day. We'll be at Troy Park in Howard County, Maryland. Three turf fields. We've got nearly 200 members of the class of 2019, 20, 21, and 22 that'll be out. We've got 15 Division I coaches that are going to be coaching them up. We're going to be battling the elements. It's going to be a lot of fun, and can't wait to watch all the talent. Ty, we'll be back next week. I'm sure there's going to be more commitment news to go over, and we'll be getting ready for weekend one of the IL Fall Invitational. In the meantime, thank you as always for listening. Follow him on Twitter at Ty Zanders, me at Terrence Foy. Follow Inside_Lacrosse. And if you like what you heard, first of all, tell a friend. We always appreciate you listening, as well as leave a rating and review on iTunes or wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts. And we'll be back next week.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.